From claims of healings and visions to the world's most inexplicable events, whether you're a believer or a skeptic, the truth is always worth the hunt.
EWTN Radio presents The Miracle Hunter with Michael O'Neill.
Welcome to The Miracle Hunter Radio Show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm The Miracle Hunter. We've got a great show ahead for you today. We'll be interviewing Monsignor Charles Pope about his brand new book, The Hell There Is, his reflections on hell, and some interesting insights about saints who have had visions and mystical experiences related to hell. We'll also be talking with Scott Carter about some exciting news that just came out this past week. We have a new American on the path to sainthood moving along. Father Emil Capon is being declared venerable according to the new path to sainthood, Oblatio Vitae. We'll be talking with Scott later in the program about this exciting sainthood news. And check out my series, They Might Be Saints. New one airs on March 2nd on Sunday at 1:30 p.m. Central Time. That will be Bishop Alphonse Gallegos. He strolled the streets of Sacramento, saving souls by visiting families and mixing with lowriders in the Latino community. I'll be profiling the Bishop of the Barrio, Alphonse Gallego, so check that one out coming up on Sunday, March 2nd. And check out my series Explore with the Miracle Hunter coming up on Saturday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. I'll be traveling to various places around the world, and we'll be looking at the miracles that have been resulted in basilicas and saints and otherwise. And so check out Explore with the Miracle Hunter every Saturday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. You can also join me on a pilgrimage if you watching my show is easier, perhaps, but it might be more fun to actually go to these places. And so you can join me on a pilgrimage for the Jubilee year. We'll be going to Milan, Turin, Florence, and Rome, ending up with the canonization of Blessed Pier Giorgio Frassati. And that's July 28th through August 4th. And people can go to pilgrimages.com/miraclehunter. We're going to see the apparition sites there and visit the Duomo in Milan. We'll visit Turin to see the Cathedral of St. John the Baptist, where the Shroud of Turin is held. And we'll walk in the footsteps of Pier Giorgio Frassati and see the place where St. John Bosco had his famous visions. We'll go to Florence, a home to many great artists, Dante, Leonardo, Michelangelo, Raphael. We'll go see the David, as well as the site of the apparition of Mary to seven holy founders of the Servites. And we'll finish up in Rome to see the many incredible sites around the Vatican and visit. Of course, we'll end up doing the canonization of Pier Giorgio Frassati at the very end. People can go to pilgrimages.com/miraclehunter to find out more and to sign up. Later in the show, we're going to be looking at the might-be saint of the day. For today, we've got Roger Lefort, who lived from 1285 to 1367 in France. The 365 Days with Mary project for today, March 1st, is the Virgin of Loreto from Moux de Mel in Spain in the year 1513. And the question of the week, will there ever be another approved Marian apparition? And the might-be saint, might-be miracle, or the miracle of the day for today, March 1st, happening in the year 1228, is a Eucharistic miracle. Let's look at the miracle news. We do this every week where we talk about the miracles happening all around the world and those things that relate to miracles. And this is the commemoration of a miracle, and maybe one that many Catholics don't know about. So 400 years ago, the apparitions of St. Anne de Auray, to Ivan Nikolatsik is celebrated now in Brittany from March 7th to July 26th in this year. The Diocese of Vannes commemorates with a jubilee the fourth centenary of the apparitions of St. Anne to a certain Ivan Nikolatsik. And there is the edifying story of a series of apparitions that mark the entire province and whose high point was the month of March in the year 1625. And so you can actually go to the Facebook page of The Miracle Hunter. I've posted a great article about this, this celebration that's happening. Most people don't know this is one of the most highly celebrated apparitions of a saint outside of Mary and Joseph. There's very few apparitions of Joseph, but this is a big one in France, the 400th anniversary. So from March 7th to July 26th this year, the Tromenie de Saint Anne will set off on the roads of the Diocese of Vannes to mark the 400th anniversary of the apparition of Jesus' grandmother to this woman, Yvonne. And it's a time of prayer and evangelization. And you can find the calendar information and itinerary if you go to the website of La Tromenie de Saint Anne. And that's there's a link to that on my Facebook page. So again, that's the miracle news for this week, the 400-year anniversary of the apparitions of Saint Anne. Let's take a look at Catholic Pub Trivia. We do this every week. We're asking a trivia question, give out a prize to an emailer who writes in the fastest with the correct answer. And the question for this week was, which pope had the shortest time between his death and canonization? And that answer, of course, we all lived through this. John Paul II, April 2nd through 2005, and was canonized April 27th, 2014. At his death, the chants of Santo Subito, sainthood immediately, were being chanted. So that happened about as quickly as possible, something like a 9-year span between those two events. So the answer for this week's Catholic Pub Trivia is Pope John Paul II. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to be talking with Scott Carter from the Beatification Cause for Father M.L. Capon about the sainthood news that came out this week.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. People who tune into this show know that I love talking about saints and American saints at that, and future American saints most specifically, and I have a television series called They Might Be Saints on EWTN, which airs weekly, where we look at the lives of Americans advancing along the path to sainthood, from servant of God to venerable to blessed to saint. I've always got my eye on the Americans who are moving along this path and hoping and praying for their causes and keeping an eye on what will be happening next. And there was a cause that I was paying special attention to over recent years, and that was for Father Emil Capon. And I noticed that in the year 2020, his cause was being seriously looked at in Rome, perhaps to be declared venerable. But with the COVID outbreak around the world, we saw that paused. And here we are, 5 years later, just this week, we have the big news coming out of Rome that Father Emil Capon has been declared venerable by the Catholic Church. Exciting news for all of the United States, and especially for that canonization cause, I'm sure, as well. We're joined today by Scott Carter from the Beatification Cause from Father Emil Capon. Welcome to the program today, Scott.
Thank you so much, Michael. It is obviously wonderful to be here and to share the great news with all your listeners. It's really a great week for all of us here in the States, the Church in America. And just to give you some consolation, the name pronunciation is an ongoing thing. So I think he most likely was called both Capon and Capon during his lifetime. You know how it goes when you immigrate from another country and land here in the States. Things
well,
get
I covered
a little
both just for fun. But so when we talk about the news that broke this week, I think Pope Francis, of course, has been ill and in the hospital, but he still called that consistory where he met with the head of the congregation for the dicastery for the cause of saints, Marcellus Moraro, and they came up with this announcement just this week. What was it like? And how did the news break to you and your team there for the Beatification Cause?
Yeah, so our postulator did give us a little bit of heads up that, you know, the bishops, I mean, so this is a long process, right? The theologians over the dicastery reviewed this last summer, and then it takes, you know, several months to get to the bishops and cardinals who actually, you know, discuss it themselves on the dicastery before it goes to the Holy Father. And so we were thrilled, you know, when 3 weeks ago we heard that this had passed, and obviously it's kept under wraps. And then guess what happens? You know, they say, well, it'll go to the Holy Father in a couple of weeks, and here he's, you know, he's hospitalized. And so obviously lots of concern for him, but also like, oh man, the timing. And as you mentioned, you know, we had some delays earlier. So
that's right. I'm pretty sure this was being considered during 2020 as well, around the time for,
yeah, and
for the same exact declaration.
Eventually get to that and then kick things back and have us redo a little paperwork. But yeah, so, you know, I had heard that he was actually doing a little bit of work, which is, I mean, just, you know, how much gratitude we have for him that he's willing to take the time in the hospital to keep things rolling and, you know, appointing bishops and just his care for the church. And I think his desire to see good examples, you know, he's said in his exhortation on holiness that the saints are the most attractive face of the church. And so to be able to, you know, I'm sure it's a great joy to be able to move people along this path. So we
absolutely
found out.
Yeah, I know some people probably look at this like the Catholic Hall of Fame.
Oh, I better check those.
Yeah, that some people probably look at this like the Catholic Hall of Fame, the, you know, recognizing the people and getting them honored. But in so many ways, this is the Catholic Church actually setting these people out for us to see their holy lives so that we can emulate them, so we can have intercessors
Absolutely.
And models for our own lives. So when we look at the life of Father M.L. Capon, talk a little bit about who was he and what were these virtues that that they're recognizing here in Rome?
Absolutely. So, yeah, so, I mean, I think you're so right. I mean, like, these are people who have lived the gospel, not just in Jesus' day, but in our day, you know, and in our times and everything. And so, Father Amel was a simple farm boy, really, from the plains of Kansas. I grew up very poor, but rich in faith, Czech immigrants, and really felt a calling, actually, towards the missionary life. Long story short, ended up feeling called to the diocesan priesthood, but he was ordained in 1940, so World War II was going on in Europe, and it took him a few years to finally convince the bishop, but the bishop allowed him to become a military chaplain. And he didn't see a lot of fighting in World War II. He was over in Burma in India, but he did have that taste for kind of that missionary calling in the army. And so he ends up coming back to the States for a couple years, but signing up again for the Army and really made a name for himself in Korea. And so, there's kind of two sides of the coin here when it comes to his heroism. And actually, the Dicastery for Saints used the Holy Father's new path, the offer of life, to advance him to venerable. So they were looking at how he, in imitation of Jesus, you know, just poured his life out for others. And I think he showed his willingness on the battlefields to put his life on the line. He wouldn't just stay back, you know, waiting for men or wounded to come to him, to the aid station. I mean, he would be there to help, but he also wanted to go out to the front lines, to the foxholes, to track men down, you know, who are in great need. And not only would he, like, say a prayer with them, you know, bring a piece of fruit to share with them to liven their spirits, crack a joke, he would actually literally drag men to safety, right? And so there's, like, the battlefield, his courage. He's eventually captured because the men he's serving with are just completely overwhelmed when the Chinese enter the war. And again, this is in Korea in 1950. And he's ordered to retreat, but he says, no, my place is here with the wounded. And so he stays with about 30 to 40 men that he had rescued with one of the other doctors. And they stayed behind and were captured. And he knew, like, okay, this could lead to his death. And sure enough, that's what happens. But not before he spends 7 months just completely giving his life to the men in the camp, serving them physically with their needs, spiritually, mentally, anything he can do to help them try and make it home. Because 40 to 50% of the men who were captured ended up dying that first winter in the prison camp. It was just, the conditions were awful. It was negative 30 degrees. They didn't have much to eat. Their captors didn't give them much. Their captors were trying to indoctrinate them with communism. And here was this priest who said, no, like, I'm going to serve body, mind, and soul for these men and try and encourage them to get home. And he eventually just gave so much that his health failed and he died in the prison camp. But he went away. He said, you know, tell my bishop I died a happy death. Like, he was completely fine with it because he wanted to give that life to the men.
Amazing. We're talking today with Scott Carter from the Beatification Cause for Father Emil Capon. And the big news from this past week was he has been moved along the path to sainthood from servant of God to venerable. And following this, we'll be looking for miracles, so moving him to blessed and saint. But one note, you mentioned that he is canonized according to the new third path to sainthood, the first being martyrdom, second, virtues, and then the third being this oblatio vitae, the free will offering of one's life out of love for another. And according to my count, this is only the second time that we've seen this new path that's been pushed forward by Pope Francis being used. So this was kind of a big deal that that this is the new mode of sainthood that's being considered, that was being applied for Father Emil Capon. And when your cause has to file for at the Dicastery for the Cause of Saints, does it have to put him in that category to start with, or does the Dicastery slot him into that once they've reviewed his cause?
Yeah, that's a good question. So we kind of work with the postulator and then the Dicastery, and there's a little bit of a conversation. We actually did, you know, make some testimony that for martyrdom, but there, we knew all along there would be some challenges to prove it. There's not any documentation from the Chinese or Koreans, and you know, his situation being an army chaplain, I think may have raised some questions. We'll see. Maximilian Kolbe took him till he was the beatification to be named a martyr. So maybe there's hope. But with the new path, I do think that the dicastery recognized, like, hey, the Holy Father wants to raise up examples for this. And so with Tuesday's decree, there was actually number two and three. There was an Italian policeman, I think, who was also named venerable according to this. So. And again, like that's really what they thoroughly look at the life. And you have to exhibit faith, hope, and charity and these other virtues anyway for any of the paths. But I think it is a beautiful example to hold up of, again, how he lived his life. I mean, Jesus says, no one has greater love than to lay down his life for a friend. But it's not just about, like, giving your life up. I mean, you know, he truly, by giving up, he gave life, right? Like the grain of wheat that falls to the ground and dies, it bears fruit. And so for all of us, I think it's a great witness, a reminder for us to persevere, you know, in those hard times when it's hard to take care of others. Right now I'm at the stage where I'm thinking of diapers and waking up in the middle of the night because our kids are not sleeping well and that sort of thing. And I think of how he would change the dirty clothing, the soiled clothing of men who are too sick to do it themselves. And even though it's winter and it's freezing cold, he would melt some snow and then, you know, wash their clothes and put it back on them. But you could look at the flip side, right? Like, if you're caring for an elderly person, I mean, that can be such a challenge. And the way that he just would not give up on these men, he would pick the lice off of their bodies, he would change their clothing. Like, it's a great testament for us. Like you said, like, these are people that we want to emulate, that can help us, give us the grace to follow Christ in our lives too. So I think it's a beautiful testament, this offer of life.
Absolutely. We're talking today with Scott Carter from the Beatification Cause for Father Emil Capon. And we were mentioning that he's at the stage of venerable, the second out of four stages, servant of God, venerable. To get to blessed, he must have one miracle work through his singular intercession. And normally these cases are cases of healing miracles. The vast majority are medical healings. And I've talked to almost all the causes throughout the United States, and it has been such a struggle for causes to find a miracle that fits the criteria that then gets proposed to Rome in a whole new process that goes forward, looked at by the medical commission, and then if approved, then the Pope may allow the promulgation of a decree for blessed. But in the case of Father Emil Capon, there are at least two or three miracles that I myself am aware of that have happened prior to him being declared venerable that can be considered for to push him forward. He might become blessed very quickly.
I hope so. No, you're absolutely right. And I mean, it is an incredible blessing. And I look around and I just see, I'm so excited to be able to keep doing this because I see how much good, you know, Father Emil is doing from heaven. And you're right. I mean, so I can't really go into a lot of details, but, you know, some of the stories made it out there. Some of these potential miracles happened about 20 years ago or so.
Maybe a pole vaulter who cracked his skull or something like this, yes.
Yeah, we've had some as recent as just a few years ago, which are also really strong. And so, yeah, we're excited to be able to present those several years because there are so many cases around the world, and it's hard to guess the time frame, but you know, we'll try and jump back in line as quickly as we can. But I can share, there's an interesting story about actually one of his roommates. So when Father Capon re-enlisted or, you know, rejoined the army in 1949, he was assigned to Fort Bliss in El Paso, Texas, and the army assigned him to live with a man named Osro Barkley. And I can't remember where Osro was from, but he said he was dating a gal named Margaret who was Catholic. And he said, I knew I needed to talk to a Catholic priest, but it wasn't my idea to live with one, you know, and the army says, well, that's too bad. And he walks in, and there's this picture of the Blessed Mother on the wall, and he's just like, oh, man, what did I get myself into, right? So obviously it's not long before Father wins him over just with his joy and his humility and humor and everything and his work ethic. And so he brings Osro into the church, celebrates their wedding. He teaches him to serve Mass. Well, they end up in different units, and Osro does end up in Korea, but he's able to make it home. So they kind of are following the story, but at the same time, they have difficulty conceiving. And so when they finally learn that Father had died, kind of late 1953, they decide, hey, let's ask him for help. They said, Father, you knew us. You knew we wanted to have a family. We can't. I think there is one of there's a fold in Margaret's fallopian tube or uterus or something that physically, biologically, the doctors had seen that prevented her from being able to have children. Well, sure enough, what happens, you know, they have a child and they're super excited and everything. Fast forward, they end up having three children. And I think Margaret has to go in again. And the doctors say, nothing has changed biologically. All three of your children are miracles. And so this happened, you know, in the 50s. And maybe one of, outside of the prison camp, probably Father's first intervention from heaven. But unfortunately for us, you know, I think the doctor had passed away by the time we came around doing the investigations. And I think there was actually a fire at the hospital with the records. So, like, you know, there's not enough medical records to promote this. But I do think it's a great story. And it's a you know, it's a start showing that even right away, I mean, stuff was going on.
Absolutely. A story that can go in the sainthood file. We've been talking today with Scott Carter about the beatification cause for Father Emil Kapan and the brand new news just out this week about him being declared venerable according to the new path, the Oblatio Vitae path for sainthood. And for people who want to find out more about Father's canonization cause, perhaps get a prayer, intercessory prayer to seek miracles of their own or to learn more about his life, what's the best place that people can go online or to get in touch?
Yeah,
with
absolutely.
You?
So, okay, I mean, keep the prayers coming. That's going to be the most helpful thing, as well as, you know, sharing his story to keep pushing him along. So the easiest way to find us is just fatherkapan.org. And you can either spell Father out or you can abbreviate it. So it's FR, and then his last name is KAPAUN.org. Or you can probably just Google it, I'm sure.
Wonderful. Well, congratulations again on the cause moving forward. I know that's a point of great joy for your diocese and for all those on the team there working at the beatification cause for Father Emil Kapan. And congratulations. It's a big day this week, and best wishes going forward for the finding of that first miracle and moving him along to being a new blessed here in the United States. So thank you so much, Scott Carter, for joining us.
Absolutely.
On
thank
program.
You. Venerable Kapan, pray for us.
That's right. Venerable Kapan, pray for us. That was Scott Carter talking to us about the brand new Venerable here in the United States. Check him out at fatherkapan.com for more information on that. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to be looking at the question of the week. Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. Hey, I love getting your questions. People write in with questions from around the world about questions about miracles happening in today's world and those that have happened centuries ago. And I love getting your questions via email. I have a pretty strange email inbox, I'll have to admit. But I also like answering questions in person. And so when I give talks around the country, I probably give 15 or 20 every year where I travel to different parishes, conferences, shrines, and talk about miracles, of course. Sometimes about Eucharistic miracles, which has been a popular topic these days. Sometimes about Marian apparitions, how the church investigates the supernatural. But if you want to have me talk at your parish, you can go to my website, miraclehunter.com, and click on the contact tab, and you can send me a message that way, and maybe I'll be speaking at a parish in your area sometime soon. And so the question for this week is a good one. And it's a Dear Miracle Hunter, will we ever see another apparition approved? Thanks, Stephen. Well, thank you, Stephen, for your question. And it's a good one. And for Catholics, especially older Catholics or people who have paid attention to this over the decades, they would say, what a silly question. Of course we're going to see an approved Marian apparition at some point. We see every, I don't know, however many years, 10 or 20 years, these incredible moments pop up, and then the local bishop investigates, and perhaps the Vatican shows some sign of recognition, and we have one of these famous cases like Lourdes, Fatima, or Guadalupe, or a handful of any other of the smaller ones, like Our Lady of Champion in the United States even, or Cabejo in Rwanda. There's a good number of Marian apparitions that have approval or recognition from the Catholic Church. So the question from Stephen is, will we ever see that again? And of course, he's referencing the new norms for the of the Church related to the judgment of alleged private revelation. So in the previous, since 1978, we should say, when a local bishop wanted to initiate an investigation, he would, and he would, if they wanted to, they could go ahead and give it some sort of a positive judgment, either nihil obstat, nothing stands in the way, some kind of faith expression recommendation, or they could say constate supernaturalitate, is established as supernatural. This is the case in Champion, Wisconsin, where in December 8th, 2010, Bishop David L. Ricken from the Diocese of Green Bay gave that solemn declaration. I was there for that. And we want to say we could see this again, but according to the new norms, this will never happen again. And so, or it will be extremely rare. And so according to these new norms, which has a number of different categories of judgment related to Marian apparitions, one which is a condemnation, one which is the highest level, nihil obstat, which means nothing obstructs, nothing gets in the way. And so, what's different about the highest level of recognition, and this was something that was labeled, given the Medjugorje phenomena was given this label, nihil obstat, or this judgment, and that means nothing stands in the way, so there's nothing wrong with it. Nothing is contrary to the faith and morals of the Church. And so, but we will never see, we don't see a category like constate supernaturalitate is established as supernatural. So we will never see that stamp of approval coming from the dicastery where they give it this sign that it's been a supernatural event. There is a tiny line in that new document that came out that said the Pope, if he wants to, can approve something as supernatural, but it gives no path forward on how that might happen. It seems like if he were to wake up one day and decide to declare something supernatural, he could do it, but there's no process. The Pope must decide in a certain amount of time, or when the bishops request it from him, he must respond, or he will respond in due time, or when further investigation has been initiated, then the Pope will make a statement. We don't see anything like this at all. There's just one kind of throwaway line in there that says if the Pope wants to, he can. And so will it ever happen again that a Marian apparition is recognized by a Pope? I'm not quite sure. It's entirely possible that if some events were so extraordinary, the Pope would have, quote-unquote, no choice but to do so. It would be the right thing to do. But he doesn't have to. And currently, the highest level of approval is nihil obstat, nothing obstructs. So things have changed quite a bit in this last year. So thank you, Stephen, for your question. Will we ever see another approved Marian apparition? I don't know. We might not. But if you have a question for the Miracle Hunter, you can send me an email to questions@miraclehunter.com, and maybe we'll be answering your question on the air next week. Let's take a look at the 365 Days with Mary project. We do this every week. We look at the Marian devotion of the days. It lines up exactly to the day's date. We all know Fatima, May 13th, or Lourdes, February 11th, or Guadalupe, December 12th. But believe it or not, there's a different Marian devotion that lines up to each and every day of the calendar year. It might be the feast day, or the commemoration of a miracle, or the building of a basilica, or some other way that Mary is honored somewhere around the world on each day of the year. So for today's day, we've got the Virgin of Loreto from Mux d'Amel in Spain from the year 1513. And the story goes that when the region around Mux d'Amel encountered a severe drought in 1545, the townspeople carried the image of the Virgin in procession 3 miles south in Santa Faz to the monastery shrine of St. Veronica. And on the return trip, Father Lorenz Bioux, he suddenly found the image too heavy to carry. And near the town of San Juan, he lifted the protective veil to examine the image, noticing the Virgin's left eye crying a tear. And the rain soon came afterwards. In the fast fiesta of La Lagrima, the tear,
is celebrated annually in Muxamel on March 1st, and the patronal fiesta of the town occurs on September 9th in honor of the Virgin of Loreto, including a reenactment of the Moors and Christians. During the Spanish Civil War, the icon was swept away to Switzerland for safekeeping in the year 1936. And that's the Virgin of Loreto from Muxamel in Spain in the year 1513. For more information on this fascinating devotion or any of the hundreds of other Marian devotions from around the world, you can go to 365dayswithmary.com. You can pick up the book or download the free at the Apple App Store, the iOS app, at 365 Days with Mary, Marian Calendar. Check that one out. Let's take a look at the miracle of the day. We do this every week where we talk about a miracle that happened on the day's date. Today's March 1st, sometime in Christian history. And for today's date, on March 1st, we have a commemoration of a Eucharistic miracle. And on March 1st, 1228, Pope Gregory IX wrote to John V, Bishop of Alatri in Latium, thanking him for a letter he had sent in which he recounted a miraculous event. And the story goes that there was a young girl who was driven by poverty from Alatri, and she became involved with a wretched, quote-unquote, wretched woman devoted to the art of magic. And the woman promised to pay her a few coins in exchange for a consecrated host. And we see the same story in Santarém in Portugal as well. And the girl went to the co-cathedral of St. Paul in Alatri, where a mass was being celebrated. And at the moment of communion, she pretended to keep the body of Christ in her mouth. Then, without anyone noticing, she wrapped it in her handkerchief. When she returned home, she decided not to give the host to the sorceress, magician, immediately, but to keep it for a little while herself. And for 3 days, something happened that frightened her. The host became a bloody lump of flesh, and she ran to alert the woman who had instigated this. And despite her distance from God and the things of faith, the magician realized the seriousness of this crime, and she refused to confess her sin to a priest, but accepted to accompany the young girl to the bishop. And when they knelt at the bishop's feet, they both confessed to the whole affair, and the bishop in turn consulted the Pope about the penance to impose on them. And this is the subject of the letter of Gregory IX on March 1st, 1228. And that is the commemoration of a miracle, a Eucharistic miracle. And like I said, it is the same exact story as the one that's told at Santarém in Portugal. And we'll be recounting all the miracles of the day for each and every day of the calendar year. Let's take a look at the sainthood news. We do this every week where we talk about people coming down the pipeline in the sainthood process. We are always excited when saints are declared, but it's a very long process, so we try to keep you up to date about who's coming ahead. So at the end of last month, Pope Francis received an audience, Cardinal Marcello Semeraro, the prefect for the Dicastery for the Cause of Saints. And during this audience, the Supreme Pontiff authorized the same dicastery to promulgate the decrees regarding the heroic virtue of the servant of God, Quintino Scuro, a diocesan priest hermit born on May 29, 1920, in Milesiano in Italy. And he died on December 26, 1968, on a path of Mount Fornalo and of Vagaretto. And he was a diocesan priest, a hermit. And he knew how to combine the contemplation and solitude with a fruitful apostolate among the local people, often going to help the needy and making himself available to the parish priests of nearby towns. And that's from the Dicastery for the Cause of Saints website, the description of Quintino Scuro, who is now a venerable. With one miracle, he'll be Blessed Quintino. With two miracles, he'll be Saint Quintino. And so that is the sainthood news for today. Let's take a look at They Might Be Saints. We do this every week where we talk about those people on the path to sainthood. We're talking about from miracle workers to martyrs to those ordinary people living extraordinary lives of heroic virtue. These are the people that make us wonder if someday they might be saints. And this lines up, of course, to my television series, which airs on EWTN called They Might Be Saints, where we look at Americans on the path to sainthood, and my book of the same name called They Might Be Saints, which is available at EWTNRC.com. I think it's my best book. And so for today's day, we've got Roger Lefort, who lived from 1285 to 1367 from France. And his feast day is today, March 1st. And the story goes that he was born around the year 1285 in the castle of Ternes near Guérette in Les Ternes, Creuse in France. And he was a French noble, the son of the Lord of Ternus in Limousin, and he was the nephew of the Cardinal of La Chapelle, Bishop of Orléans, France, in 1321 while still a subdeacon. And he was the Bishop of Limoges in 1328 and the Bishop of Bourges in 1342-43. And he instituted a feast in honor of Mary's Immaculate Conception. And he left all his property in his will for the education of poor boys. And he died in 1367 of natural causes, and he's buried in the choir of the Cathedral of Bourges in France. And that is Roger Lafort, a blessed, with one miracle. He will be Saint Roger Lafort. And for those people who are interested in my television series, They Might Be Saints, the next airing is on Sunday, March 2nd at 1:30 p.m. They Might Be Saints, Bishop Alphonse Gallegos. He strolled the streets of Sacramento, saving souls by visiting families and mixing with the lowriders in the Latino community. I'll be profiling the Bishop of the Barrio, Bishop Alphonse Gallegos, who's a venerable. And that's on They Might Be Saints, coming up on Sunday, March 2nd at 1:30 p.m. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to be speaking with Monsignor Charles Pope. Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. I think one of the things that's going on in our world today, and maybe it's been going on for a long, long time, is that people don't necessarily have a concept that there is a hell anymore. We all might hope that hell is empty and that there is no hell, but perhaps that's the wrong way to go about things. And we even have saints throughout history, saints and mystics, who have had visions of hell, and those we can sort of examine those experiences of those saints and mystics, and perhaps come to a greater understanding that the hell there is. And that is the name of a new book from Monsignor Charles Pope, who is the author of numerous Catholic books and our guest today. Welcome to the program today, Monsignor Charles Pope.
Well, it's good to be here. Thank you.
Now, thank you for coming on. I think this book is so important, and I'm sure that's the reason that you wrote it. But talk a little bit. Of course, hell isn't necessarily a fun topic to write about. It's maybe people aren't running to the library and the bookshelves to read about hell. But why is this so important? Why did you write this book?
Yeah, well, just to focus on one thing you just mentioned, you know, it's not a very pleasant topic, but if you don't know the bad news, the good news is no news. You know? We've kind of been avoiding the bad news, and that is that we're without Christ, we're doomed. And so in that sense, it frames out the good news. But that said, the main reason I wrote it, though, is, you know, I have to say we have almost a complete lack of urgency in the church today about anything. And it largely comes from, I think, the practical denial of hell. Almost everybody, even very devout Catholics who come to Mass daily, are skeptical. Oh, God wouldn't really do that. I mean, you know, come on. You know, he's a good guy. He's not really going to, you know. And so, again, this is where I think there's just no urgency. Does it really, at the end of life, matter if you go to church or not? If you get married and stay married and keep your commitments and all those things or not? If you, you know, dabble in all kinds of other sins and so on or not, the practical thing is, no, none of those things really do matter, do they?
And so, right.
No, and I think churches are more empty, and we've stopped missionary activities and, you know, all that. So that, I think it's the total lack of urgency that I think is fueled by this that most alarms me.
And we've heard from various people over time, even recently, of this idea can we hope that hell is empty? What would the saints or mystics or others who have reflected on hell say about this concept of can we have good hope that hell is empty?
Yeah. Well, again, this idea that hell is probably largely empty is extremely modern. There was a slight dabbling with this by Origen in the early church, but other than that, I mean, he was rejected for that, by the way. Origenism was called a heresy and so on. So I won't get into all that, but let's just see that, the saints, of course, themselves have a remarkably consistent pattern, of warning about hell And by the way, this isn't just fear-mongering. This is based on a good, sober understanding of what Jesus himself
I was going to say, let's get to what Jesus said. I mean, we can know all the conjecture of the saints and mystics as holy people, but what did Jesus Christ himself say about hell? Did he mention hell, of course?
Over and over and over again. In fact, it's the main theme of most of his parables. 21 of the 38 parables are about, the final, our final judgment and where we're going to spend eternity. You know, there's the wheat and the tares, there's the sheep and the goats, those on the right, those on the left. There's the wise virgins, the foolish virgins. You know, there's the dragnet, there's the parable of the prodigal son, you know, and that's a very remarkable one. It ends with the father pleading for the second son to come into the party. And the second son says, no, I don't want to come in there. I don't like that party as long as that dirty, rotten brother of mine is in there. And this parable ends. As if to say, you and I have to decide, do we want heaven on God's terms or not? Because a lot of people say, oh, everybody wants to go to heaven. But the problem is they want to go to a heaven of their own design. But the real heaven enshrines a lot of values that many people today don't want a thing to do with. For example, chastity, but also love of one's enemy, forgiveness, generosity. A lot of people don't want a thing to do with some or all of those things. And God's not going to force it. But we all have a decision to make. All those parables come down to these ideas that the Lord is saying, you have a decision to make. And his most specific reference to hell, when he was asked this question, are those to be saved many or few? He said, few. And on two occasions, this is recorded in the Gospels. And we have completely reversed his answer. And this is contrary to what Christ himself teaches. In fact, I'll just make this final remark. No, nobody loves you and me more than Jesus, and yet nobody spoke about hell and the possibility of it more than Jesus. Because he loves us. He knows how we are. He knows how stubborn and stiff-necked we can be, and that we don't really, at the end of the day, will want what he's offering. And he's not going to force anyone. So hell exists not because the mean God is trying to keep people out, but rather it exists because we have a God who's deeply respectful of our freedom and our choices. So Jesus finally concludes. He says, here's the nature of the judgment, that the light has come into the world, but indeed many prefer the darkness.
One of the chapters in your book, The Hell There Is, we're talking today with Monsignor Charles Pope, is about why is hell eternal? Why is there no repentance in hell? Talk a little bit about the permanence of hell and why that's part of the equation here that we have to consider.
You know, that's the thing I think that is probably the most mysterious, you know. Why is it? And again, St. Thomas and other saints all conclude the same, including the fathers of the church, that there comes a moment in our life when our decisions are forever fixed, the fundamental decisions toward God or against and so on. And the fathers of the church liken this to a kind of a clay on a potter's wheel. As long as it's on that wheel and moist, it can be molded and fashioned. But once it goes into the kiln or the fire, its shape is fixed. And this is an image of the fire of judgment. We pass as if through fire. And what we have made ourselves or constituted ourselves to be either for or against the kingdom is forever fixed, so that it's not that God is really, really, really mad and he can keep you there forever, but it's rather that we are no longer able to change that fundamental view. There's a slight hint of that in the parable of Dives and the rich man. And Lazarus. So the rich man and Lazarus, where the rich man, Lazarus goes to heaven, the rich man goes to hell. And the rich man cries out from hell toward Abraham. Then he says, send Lazarus down with water so he can fetch a pail of water and bring it to me. I'm tormented in this place. You know, the odd thing about that question is he doesn't ask to go to heaven. And in a certain sense, he can't. And also, he hasn't changed. Even though he has to look up to see him, he still sees Lazarus as beneath him and as an errand boy. In a certain sense, he can't change. He's just fixed. And he does cry out for about his brothers, so there's something there. But again, it's odd. He doesn't ask to go to heaven. There's something fixed about him, as if he can't change. So that's the mystery, you know, of our being. that, and this is certainly taught by the fathers of the church and by the church itself, that our decisions after we die are forever fixed.
Amazing. And you mentioned Thomas, of course, a saint who has had reflections on hell and talked about the theology associated. But what about other saints when we talk about perhaps saints who have had visions of hell, the Fatima children and others, they actually claim to have witnessed or experienced hell in some way. What can we learn from the occasions of mystics and saints?
Yeah, again, obviously the children from Fatima, gave the some of that terrifying visions. I can read you some of it. It may be too lengthy for this segment we're in, but again, Mary opened up her hands, says Lucia and Lucia, as she had done, and the rays of light appeared, and then we saw as if we were a vast sea of fire. And plunged in this fire, we saw demons and the souls of the damned. The latter were like transparent burning embers, all blackened and burnished bronze. Having human forms, they were floating about in the conflagration, raised into the air by the flames that issued from within themselves, together with great clouds of smoke. And then they would fall back. And so it goes on like that. Demons were distinguished from the souls of the damned by their terrifying, repellent likeness. Frightful unknown animals and so on, and so it's frightening and fiery and just a very unpleasant place. But it's a fascinating detail that the fire emerges even from within the damned souls as well as the demons. It's their own fire of rejection of God, you see, and this is what it is. And Sister Faustina Kowalska had a similar vision, and she says. The devils were full of hatred for me. She saw the vision of hell, and they had to obey me by the command of God. But I was led by an angel to the chasms of hell. It is a place of great torture. How awesomely large and extensive it is. Kinds of tortures I saw. And she goes on to list a number of tortures. Again, it's in the book, but probably too lengthy to go through here. But again, she said, I would have died at the very sight of these tortures if Almighty God had not supported me. So let the sinner know he will be tortured through eternity in those senses which he made use of to sin. I am writing this at the command of God, so that no soul may find an excuse by saying there is no hell, or that nobody has ever been there. You know, how terribly the souls suffer there. And again, she gives this warning, not as a fear-mongering, but just saying, look, the Lord wants to rescue and keep you from this. Don't choose wisely, my friends, is basically the notion, you know. And in addition, I don't know how much more time we have, but I would say that Dante and Thomas and others also reasoned that not everybody suffers in hell the same way, that some suffer more than others, again, depending on the severity of their crimes, you know. Some just lightly rejected God and say, well, I have better things to do than think about heaven or want that, those kinds of things. And they're in a further away from the pit of fire than say those who committed treachery and misled the faithful into heresy and sin and so on. Those suffer many more torments. Again, Our Lady also, as you probably know, says more souls go to hell for sins of the flesh than any other sin. But that doesn't mean it's the most serious things like treachery and. Betrayal and so on are among the most serious. A final thought on all that, regarding, for example, sins of the flesh. Look, all of us know many struggle because of weakness. They sin to weakness, but they know enough to get to confession and to say it's wrong. Here's the biggest problem today. It is defiance. I will not be told what to do. There's nothing wrong with what I'm doing. I'm going to celebrate this thing. And, you know, you can't, you know, get your rosaries off my ovaries, all that kind of stuff. The anger and the defiance, and their number today is legion. Legion. Many, many people simply defy what God teaches. And so these are some of the sad tragedies of where we are today.
And the name of the book is The Hell There Is by Monsignor Charles Pope. And Monsignor, as we wrap up the interview today, What is your hope for people who pick up this book? I think that, of course, being confronted with the reality of hell is so important. But what is your hope for people who pick it up and can build and repair their relationship with Christ?
Yeah, I'm hoping for a good, sober, you know, clear-minded, in other words, understanding of why hell exists. It's not because there's a mean, angry God. It's actually the opposite. There's a God who's deeply respectful of our freedom. But because of that, he warns us. And we should take these warnings seriously, that we can constitute ourselves as people who don't really, we're going to end up preferring the darkness to the kingdom of light. And this is a great tragedy. It creeps up in our souls and so on. So I'm hoping that we'll have a good, sober appreciation, not of some mean, nasty, angry God, but of the tendency of our soul to prefer the darkness, and then work very hard and say, Lord, help me. Fix my heart. I'm focused on the wrong things, and I don't want to focus on the right things. Help me, Lord. If we can just come to get on our knees once again and say, I need you, Lord, in the sacraments. I need better faith. I need the liturgy. I need your word. I need to pray. And be urgent about this, like we are often urgent, like when back during COVID, we were all crazy. We should have a reverential fear of this, but not running around in a panic. God wants to save us. He's not our enemy, but we can harden our hearts against him very easily over time. So my hope is that we'll come back to a certain urgency about the need for all the things I just mentioned, that we should take our medicine and be very serious about going to the divine physician every day for a checkup and asking him to help us to take seriously what he says and teaches us about the hardness of our hearts and need for his grace.
Wonderful. Well, we're so grateful to you, Monsignor Charles Pope, for your brand new book, The Hell There Is, and for joining us on today's show. And what's the best place people can go to pick up this book?
Well, they can certainly go to Amazon, but they can also go to TAN Publications, or really any Catholic, good Catholic bookseller, EWTN's religious catalog. You know, TAN is sending it to all the usual places, so anything.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much, Monsignor Charles Pope, author of the new book, The Hell There Is, for joining us on today's program.
Thank you.
God bless. And that was Monsignor Charles Pope. Check out his new book, The Hell There Is, available at TAN Books or anywhere Catholic books are sold. And that's all the time we have for today's show. If you missed any of this episode or want to catch up on past episodes, you can go to ewtn.com/radio, check out the audio archives, or download the EWTN app. I'd like to thank our guest today, Monsignor Charles Pope, talking to us about his brand new book, The Hell There Is, and Scott Carter for talking to us about the incredible life of Father Emil Capon, who has moved along to Venerable on the path to sainthood. Check out my series, Explore with the Miracle Hunter, which airs every Saturday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. And also, you can join me on pilgrimage for our Jubilee year this year. From July 28th through August 3rd, I'll be going to Rome, Milan, Florence, and Turin. We'll see the Marian apparition sites and visit the Duomo in Milan, visit Turin to see the Cathedral of St. John the Baptist, where the Shroud of Turin is held, and walk in the footsteps of Pier Giorgio Frassati and see the place where St. John Bosco had his famous visions. We'll go to Florence, to the home of many great artists and saints, and we'll see Michelangelo's David, as well as the site of the apparition of Mary to the seven holy founders of the Servites. We'll finish up in Rome to see the incredible sites around the Vatican and finish with the canonization of one of the great modern saints, and of course that's Pier Giorgio Frassati. You can find out more and sign up at pilgrimages.com/miraclehunter. And I'd like to thank you today for joining me on Miracle Hunter, where from claims of healings and visions to the world's most inexplicable events, whether you're a believer or a skeptic, the truth is always worth the hunt. Talk to you next week.